Welcome to episode 25 of the Serious About Security podcast for February 1st, 2013, brought to you by the Center for Education and Research in Information Assurance and Security, or SERIAS, at Purdue University. I'm Preston Wiley, and I'm joined today by Keith Watson and Mike Hill.
The first article for today is on a computer science student from Montreal's Dawson College that was recently expelled for discovering a software vulnerability. The student, along with one of his classmates, was working on a mobile app. And while working on this mobile app, they discovered a flaw in the computer code that would allow anyone with a basic understanding of computers to access students' private information, things like their social security number, home address, phone number, and class schedules. So the student contacted the college and informed them of the vulnerability and was initially praised for the effort. And we're told that the software was developed by SkyTech Communications. The students were told that the flaw would be corrected and that there was really nothing to worry about. So a couple days later, the student then decided to run a web vulnerability scan on the Dawson College network to see if the vulnerability still existed. And he was immediately contacted by phone from the president of SkyTech and informed that what he was doing was an illegal activity and that he would need to sign a non-disclosure agreement and pretty much promise not to conduct such an activity. The student responded that he apologized repeatedly and said that he meant no malicious intent. He was one of the original discoverers of the flaw, and he wanted to make sure that it had been patched. However, when this got turned over to the college felt that this action was severe enough that action needed to be taken, and the computer science professors voted 14-1 to go ahead and expel the student. The student tried to appeal, and his appeals were denied, essentially. So this student, in his own words, you know, he was getting A's in all of his classes, and he really meant no harm in what he was doing. He even made the statement, if I wanted to do anything maliciously, I wouldn't have just done it. You know, I would have done it behind a proxy. I would not have done this just in the wide open. I would have protected what I was doing. You know, his college career has been severely damaged from this because of being expelled. Plus, he owes now back on financial aid and all those kinds of things. What's interesting is updates that have come out on this story is that while the college has refused to back off the fact that they've expelled him, a number of companies, I believe 10 or more, have contacted him and offered him jobs. Most interestingly, the company that developed the software that he found the flaw in offered him a position as well. So I just thought this would be this seems to be a very polarizing story. There's a lot of things, a lot of chatter in the security world about this. You know, on the hard line, it's like, well, you know, he ran a web vulnerability scan. You know, it's an illegal act. He should be expelled. And on the other hand, you have folks saying, listen, this was a student. How well did the professors teach these students to not do something like this? Did he really understand the significance of the scan and what the implications of running it would be? And really, the fact that he'd done a good deed already, should the college have done, you know, went ahead and expelled him in the manner they did, because they kind of brought a lot of negative attention on themselves by doing this. So I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this and what you felt about this story.
You know, some of what I do in my job is to do web scanning, looking for vulnerabilities, that sort of thing. But you know, I'm not a student anymore, and as a professional, we have to make sure that we're very careful that we get the right permission of the people who own the system and whatever they're connected to. They get the permission of all the people in the chain along the way, just to make sure that they all know that it's going to happen, first of all, and that we have permission to do so. Typically, I'm not working on looking at vulnerabilities from a let's test the staff, you know, see how well they react to a scan approach. That's not work I usually do. But you still have to have permission to do the scan. And even if you want to do a follow-up scan later, you need more permission to make sure that everybody's aware of it. And I think the student was a little overzealous in using the scanner after the fact just to verify that the problem had been corrected. I think that's really the biggest issue here that I see. He reported it. They thanked him for his report. And then he got a little antsy and said, well, I wonder if they fixed it yet. And it's only a couple days later. Sadly, a flaw like that, especially one where there's a third party involved because the college didn't develop the software. That was from a third party. Those things don't get fixed right away. And he may not have realized that or was just hoping for the best. Even if his intentions were good, you don't go back and rescan something unless you're asked specifically to do that. So I think he goofed a little bit there. Now, the college's reaction to it, I thought, was a little harsh. That's my opinion.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I think, especially considering that this is a college and this was an educational opportunity, a chance to educate a student in what is right and what is wrong, and you should get authorization from the proper channels in order to do this type of scan. Just asking one professor or whatever, isn't the correct authorization to do this sort of thing. I think the college may have been a little bit may have went a little bit overboard in the expelling of the student, because it is a college is a place to educate, and I mean, if this was a corporate environment and this was an employee that did it, maybe that penalty of firing an employee for doing a scan against a corporate network without permission may have been justified. But I think in a college environment, especially if they didn't teach the student that this was a bad thing to do, then it may have been in their terms of service or their acceptable use policy. But that isn't. Students aren't required to sign something that says, "Oh, we accept this acceptable use policy" or whatever. So I think that they went a little bit overboard, and they should have used it more as an educational opportunity than as an excuse to expel a good, from what I can read, a good student.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the result of what the college has done is they've kind of taught the lesson that, if you see something, maybe you shouldn't say anything, because in this case, it's, he spoke up when he discovered something, and then what appears to be, the things I read in the article was really trying to determine intent. Did this kid really want to go and do any harm? It really seems like he didn't. I think you put it best, Keith. He was just overzealous. And, the fact that they turned around and just said, well, that's it, and what's really bothersome is he didn't even really get to state his view, his own – he didn't get to present his side of the case to the professors, out of 15, only one supported him, and maybe that was one of the professors he worked with most closely. I don't know that, but I don't know how much these other professors even knew him, how much they were briefed ahead of time. I mean, they might have just been told, "Hey, someone conducted a malicious scan on our network. What should we do with this student?" Well, hey, they shouldn't do that. They should be expelled. So it's unfortunate. I think in the future, students are going to be less likely to maybe report these types of things if they're familiar with this story. And ultimately, it is an educational institution. It's about teaching the students. And one of the comments under one of the articles, I thought had a great thread. The person who posted the comment said, "I would have just made this kid sweat for a while. I would have said, we're going to go review this." And I would have made him wait like 4 or 8 hours, just sitting out in a hall, and then came back and said, "Okay, we've decided we're going to let you stay, but under these conditions," and just make him really think about the actions. I think that would have made the point without making him, end his college career with their institution.
Yeah. The other interesting thing is he claims that he was threatened by the by the president of SkyTech, which is apparently the company that provided the software the university used, and threatened by them, and then forced to meet with the president, and sign a non-disclosure agreement, or he'd call the cops, basically. That is typical overreaction by software companies. And sadly, this is not the first time I've heard of this happening. But I think this guy, president of SkyTech, seemed a little more anxious to protect his company from the press, from this guy exposing details about what he found, than fixing the issue. And sadly, we have a lot of CEOs and presidents that typically think that way, when they should be saying, hey, thanks for finding that. Can you come in and tell us what you found and how you found it so we can correct it quickly? Wouldn't that be the right way to do it?
Yeah, it seems to be. I think that the company was a little bit kind of – they went a little bit overboard as well. So I think pretty much everybody went a little bit overboard, and it's a little bit knee-jerk reaction to things like this. So I think that the finding a security vulnerability should not be one of those things that just instantly – you know, throws up your defenses, and it's like, oh, we better be as worried about this as possible and try and, you know, keep it hidden. I don't think that's the proper response, and that seems to be a very common one.
Yeah, well, maybe as a result of this story, in the future, colleges and businesses may rethink their position a little bit, because I see this maybe, you know, ultimately a lost opportunity. You know, I would think, you know, if he were in the position again, it's likely he would not have probably even reported it. You know, he took an extra measure and said, hey, here's something and you should do something about it. And then, you know, when he tried to check up on it, he kind of had his hand slapped and said, well, no, don't do that. I mean, it seemed like they said even though they thanked him for finding it, it seemed like a very small thank you versus the when he did something they saw as inappropriate, they just sort of brought the whole house down on him and said, well, that's wrong. You know, you did something good. Here's a little praise. You did something bad. Well, I'm going to throw everything at you. We can. So, you know, I don't know if the school's position will change on this. Honestly, now that he's getting job offers and going through this with this university, you know, with this college, I'm not even sure he would want to go back and be a student there at this point. But it'd be nice if they could at least remove the expulsion from his record so that he can go on and do other things.
Well, as you know, even in the security professional community, we have a lot of people without degrees. And so I don't see this as a big issue if he wants to continue doing work in this area. I'm sure he'd be well employed. If he wants to get a degree, well, that might be a little more challenging. Well, I guess we'll move on to the next article. And this is based on a paper that is going to be published in a conference coming up. And the conference is a conference on data and application security and privacy. And the paper is written by some graduate students at Carnegie Mellon and MIT. And basically, they discovered that typically we've recommended that people set very long passwords. We've recommended that ourselves on this podcast many times. But the problem is when you choose your longer password, if you're using some features of grammar, they have discovered ways in which they can use that to shorten the amount of time it would take to crack passwords. So even if you have a longer password, radical sequence, that can be used to their advantage on the password cracking side of it. And so the paper is very detailed about how this works, and they've done quite a bit of effort. And that includes integrating their algorithm into John the Ripper and Hashcat. And these are tools that security professionals and those maybe not in the security community or professional community, at least, use to crack passwords. And so So basically, the recommendations we've been making to make your passwords longer, we need to think about that again. And unfortunately, this paper points out a weakness in that way of doing things.
Well, I mean, it makes good sense. I mean, when you move up to using, you know, words versus letters, I mean, if you put them in a logical order, which, I mean, according to the article, you know, proper English grammar, then they become more easily crackable. It makes good sense that this would be the case. And when you want to crack passwords, you use the most, you know, an ordering that makes sense. So I think, you know, it's kind of not a huge, you know, leap to make, but, you know, it's good that it's was tested and is and a paper was written about it. And I mean, an argument can be said is which is stronger, a short password that, you know, is not very secure versus this long passphrase, which one's going to take longer to crack. But I was happy to read the paper. I mean, it makes sense to me, but it's good that it's out there. And I think that maybe we do need to kind of add some more advice to when we give people advice about creating a very strong password.
Yeah, the article had some interesting advice for those that maintain systems, also maintain databases that store passwords, in stating, you know, that the algorithms such as SHA-1 and MD5, you know, a slower algorithm like SHA-512 should be used instead, because the time it takes to crack using that algorithm's much slower. It takes a lot longer time. So that was the kind of piece of information that I looked at, and I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, one of the things we face as users is we never know exactly how the system we're storing our password is using it. So I guess we should just assume that they're kind of probably using the weakest methods available, and we should try to come up with the strongest password that we can. But, you know, for those of us that maintain systems, we also need to take into account that beyond adding some additional rules, because this article is kind of advocating, you know, maybe putting in some additional rules with the passphrases to make them stronger passphrases. The comment there at the end was, well, if you're storing, you know, if you're storing using SHA-512, that's stronger than storing it using SHA-1. And I think that's some good advice to take into consideration as well, is to store those passwords in the strongest format that you can. Of course, salting them and doing all those additional things.
Well,
as well.
True, Mike. But I think they're specifically saying, in the last paragraph of the Ars Technica article, it mentions using bcrypt and pbkdf2. And when you saw the SHA-512, I think they were talking about SHA-512 crypt, which takes the SHA-512 algorithm, but manipulates it a little more to make the password a little more complex.
Oh, yes, yes.
But the point is well taken. I mean, the problem with MD5 and SHA, any of the SHA algorithms we've talked about before, you know, they're designed for cryptographic operations to be very fast, and that's not what you want in a password hashing algorithm. So those other ones do make more sense for that. But still, the problem is, you know, using the techniques highlighted in this paper, longer passwords are not necessarily safer passwords unless you add a little more complexity to them. So just having like a sentence or a three-word statement for your password, you know, and manipulate a couple characters in there, change your S's to dollar signs, that sort of thing, that may not be a sufficient way to generate us a stronger password. Now, again, this is still research. This is a paper. There may be some implementation out there, but certainly now that people know that this is another way of doing it, that will probably get rolled into many of these password cracking algorithm systems pretty soon.
Well, yeah, and I think that the advice I'd give people is is use, as we, as with strong passwords, use special characters throughout your password and things like that, and changing S's to dollar signs or whatever. That's not what I consider using special characters. It's putting, just inserting, just putting special characters within your password, you know, just insert a random exclamation point or number sign or percent sign or whatever, to kind of give it this more seemingly randomness. When somebody's trying to crack your password, they have no idea how your password is arranged, and any logic that goes into the way your password is created, be it words or phrases or logical order and grammar or whatever, is just a method to crack a password, and inserting anything that is out of the ordinary into your password is automatically going to make it more difficult to crack.
Right. I guess the next question will be, if this turns out to be a common technique that attackers use to crack passwords, and we already have a password strength library, a set of libraries for password strength or password quality, we're going to have to change those quality algorithms a bit too to counteract this. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And we don't see a lot of, there are a lot more, let's say. There are a lot more today sites where you generate a password or change an existing password, and it gives you a rough idea of the quality of that password. And usually on a web page, it's like a JavaScript library or something like that. If you're on a desktop application, that might be built into the OS or part of that particular application. But there's a little bit of mystery behind how those work too, not from a programmer point of view, but how well they provide enough feedback to a user to say, hey, the password you've chosen is kind of weak. Could you try something a little better? And maybe there can be something that can be done in that side where you try to encourage people to create stronger passwords, something they can still remember, but still stronger passwords, and then avoid some of these issues of that we've talked about today.
Yeah, and I think this article just kind of highlights, advocates using password safes, which we've talked about in the past. The problem with passwords that we come up with as humans is that other humans can think up similar type things, you know, as Preston was mentioning, you know, replacing special characters, you know, that doesn't necessarily strengthen it so much as inserting them in random places. And
right.
The computer does a really good job of creating passwords for you that creates something that's more random than something we can just come up with ourselves and try to remember. So I think this is really a very interesting article. I can see how this is possible, and you know, I can see how this is going to continue to evolve this way, because as they get these kind of dumps of passwords, there's going to be patterns. You know, as humans, we're going to have patterns. You know, a lot of people are going to do things very similar and create phrases in a very similar way, and as those things, they'll be able to keep tweaking, you know, their attacks on these passwords to say, well, this is the most common format. You know, again, I think that's where these password saves we've talked about in the past are really helpful, because you can have it create a random password for you. You can have different passwords for every site that you use, and you just need to remember the one password you created it with. You need to make that password strong enough, I guess, so that it's not vulnerable to these types of attacks.
That, or we start using the one-time password systems more. And those are still being rolled out, I guess you could say. So maybe we'll see more YubiKeys in the future, right?
Thank you for listening, and thanks to Keith Watson and Mike Hill. I'm Preston Wiley. Have a safe and secure day.